Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable on this Friday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It is 12 minutes after 9 o'clock. Time to begin this morning's panel discussion on topics in the news. Joining us, WAMC's Alan Shartok, University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo, and associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain. Good morning, all. How are we? No?
We're good.
We're good.
Everybody's good?
We're fine. I'm fine.
All right. You seem maybe hesitant on that.
I think I'm fine.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. Well, you know, we'll start where we have started now for a week. And I hate to say I'm irritated by the coverage of Flight 370, but I'm irritated by the coverage of Flight 370. Every minute of every program, it changes. Now, I understand it's a mystery, but this is a technological age. There are satellites. There are countless ships. There are planes looking for this flight. Nobody seems to know which direction it went. Nobody seems to know for how long it was flying. Nobody seems to know much. Now we're sending a ship to the Indian Ocean because now we think it might be there. The Chinese this morning say there was a sea bottom event in the spot where it was originally projected to be when the transponders were turned off. Panel, we'll start with Rosemary. What's going on?
Well, it's as you say, a huge story. The media is having trouble covering it because when something happens, it will be huge and everybody wants to be first. So they're just hanging on, waiting for the time that that happens. The experts are saying within a week, we're going to know a lot more. And they're trying to slowly piece it together. I've been reading aviation experts writing about this, which is fascinating. It's a whole science we don't know anything about. We're the ones saying, you know, use your little magic radar buttons and tell us where it is. It doesn't work that way. There's a lot of study and effort is going in. Time magazine reports on its online presence today that it's looking more and more like some sort of sabotage, whether that's a hijacking or internal, you can't tell. But someone who knew about flying, turned off the transponders, and kept that plane flying for at least 4 hours that we know about, maybe landed it, we don't know that, and managed to do it without hitting the spots in the globe where they might have been picked up. That's fascinating.
It is fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, there was actually one of the morning shows on television this morning where they had an aviation expert, you know, an NTSB type person, and they were speculating about where they could land a plane like this secretly and
correct,
keep it secret. Now, he came right back and said, I have to say that you would need such a long stretch of pavement that this could go on, this could happen undetectably, you know, it's just impossible. And he was staking his professional reputation that the plane is at the bottom of the ocean. But the fact that,
right.
I mean, there's almost like three threads to this story. One thread is, you know, this terrible tragedy and the anguish of everybody who's connected to the people on that plane. The second threat is what went wrong? You know, was it, you know...
We don't even know what happened.
We don't know
what went wrong.
Right. What happened and what can we learn from it? And was it an intentional one, which is more and more looking like it was? And then the third one is the media coverage of the story itself.
That's, right. That's where
that's
I
good.
Want to bring
that's
Alan
good.
Into this. And by the way, the roundtable at WAMC.org, excuse me, it's roundtable at WAMC.org if you want to send us an email, roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan, Mike hit upon the subject of my irritation this morning, and that is the nebulous media coverage of this. And in your estimation, you've been in this game a long time, is there a certain responsibility to wait until some facts are actually known before jumping to huge suppositions and speculations? Alan.
Well, my old friend, here's the problem. I put it on you. What would you do? You're the editor. You're Mike Spain of the paper, you know, the number two guy at the Times Union. What do? You have to have something. You feel people want to know. You can't make it go away. So it's like the weather report. Everybody has a different idea. I just think it's awful. I turn it off myself, to be honest with you. But I don't see what the choices are.
You know, I haven't turned it off. In fact, I watched until late last night and watched again as of 6 o'clock this morning.
Well, there you go.
But the you know, it's very strange. Now, let me give you the latest, well, at least the latest as of very early this morning from the New York Times. Investigators are examining data that appear to show that the missing Malaysia Airlines jetliner was still in automated communication with satellite systems. These are the engine pings, the 4 or 5 engine pings we have heard of over the last 12 to 15 hours, and may therefore still have been airborne or at least functional for hours after ground controllers last heard from it. And that's from a well-placed official involved in the investigation. Mm-hmm. However, there seems to be a line of... A line coming from the Malaysian government. There's a line coming from U.S. investigators. There's a line coming from Chinese investigators. And they're all different. Malaysian officials say, well, Boeing, the maker of the 777, said, no, we're not getting data from these engines. But yet investigators, unnamed or otherwise, are saying we had 4 or 5 pings from these engines. Rosemary.
Well, part of this is you got 12 countries involved in the search, many languages, lots of reporters, different reporters calling lots of different agencies. So I'm not sure that they're getting it straight. That's number one. And number two, there is conflicting information. It's the start of a mysterious investigation. So the fact that the information conflicts is not at all surprising. And it gets back to, can we wait? No, we're not going to wait. So this ought to be crafted as, here's how we're trying to figure out what's going
on.
Okay,
you mean we as journalists?
We as journalists.
Not we as investigators.
No, we as journalists.
But don't you guys think that this business of unnamed sources, which in some places, okay, we got a guy in Albany, all he does is say an unknown named source, and he's a good one, that kind of stuff. But in this case, because of this dissonance between the various actors, the Boeings and the Chinese and this and that, don't you think it gets awfully dangerous when we, because I don't give it a lot of credibility. Does anybody else?
What are you talking about, not giving credibility to
unnamed sources?
Well,
unnamed sources.
I think that is the nature of this kind of a story. And Rosemary used the word mysterious. That's what it is. It is a mystery. And every single day that you can't find an airliner full of people that went down somewhere, and now looks like the Indian Ocean.
Maybe.
Right, exactly, till tomorrow, till the next story.
Yeah.
It is getting kind of interesting. It's like a novel, and it's all unfolding. And I think what happens when you don't have information is you start to use less credible sources because you want something for the next half-hour newscast.
The low point was the Washington Post citing unnamed online conspirators. They actually said that and then put it in there. Yeah, ridiculous.
Well, Alan, that gets back to your point.
Yeah, well, it does. I've been yelling about unnamed sources for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm, you have.
If the choice is you get an unnamed source or you get nothing, they take the unnamed source. But, I'm an unnamed source, and I'm going to tell you what I really think, about this. We get, a lot of letters every day saying what people think about it. Are those unnamed sources? I mean, how much credibility do you have to have? And Mike and Rosemary, what are the rules for unnamed sources that you have and have had at your papers?
You have to have more than one. They have to be not connected to each other. So in other words, it's not like...
Independent.
Yeah, they're not concocting the story with each other. You have to reveal it.
What do you mean more than one?
You have to... Three sources, three unnamed sources. You may never use an unnamed source.
What if it's, say... What if you're putting your journalistic integrity on the line? You have an exclusive with Richard Nixon, but he's not saying use my name.
You jumped into me. You must reveal this. It's not just the reporter alone. It must be a joint decision with top editors. And if it is someone who truly is in the know, the president, of course, would be obvious. But if the chief of police is telling you what's really happening in the investigation, you and your editor might say, okay, for this, we're going to go with unnamed source. Mm.
Yeah,
and if I remember correctly, and one of them is at your paper, Michael, the top guys in for Deep Throat are now saying, when we finally found out who it was, said, I didn't know it. Now, how does that sit with your rules of the engagement?
They had a special deal in Watergate, though. They were working
unusual.
With Ben Bradley.
Yeah. Special deal. Oh,
well,
I get it.
A special story, Alan.
I think everything is unique. You know, you might use one unnamed source, and if it's credible, you may decide to go with it, as Rosemary said. If you know who it is and you've discussed it with your editor, not everybody in the building will know, but there needs to be some kind of credibility to it and some kind of accountability.
But ultimately, it does come down to accountability and the reputation of the journalism in question. If Rosemary puts out a story, she has an unnamed source that she thinks is unimpeachable, and you can't use the name, and you go ahead and run with that, and that person somehow says, well, I guess I was wrong, or I wasn't telling you the truth. That's on Rosemary.
Yeah, but
yes.
We're applying this to the way that we're covering the area in which we're expert. Not too many media agencies are expert in aviation, especially in aviation in Southeast Asia. And the farther away you get from your expertise and the farther away you get geographically and culturally, the easier it is to have unnamed sources and rumors, essentially, and unnamed online conspirators work their way into news stories, especially when there's an enormous appetite to know what's happened now, and people are trying to fill that gap with, and the standards get lowered, and now there's anything goes on this.
Yeah, which is the point. Isn't it a dirty habit? You know, in other words, it's so easy after a while to say unnamed sources. We know people who do it all the time. They never have a source. I just think once you get into it, it gets to be compulsive behavior.
Well, you know, Gannett newspapers after some abuses ruled out no unnamed sources. That was the ironclad rule, no unnamed sources. Mm. And the result has been really kind of tepid and like unimpressive reporting from the Gannett newspaper. They cannot report about the military. They cannot report about budgets. They cannot do any of the deep-seated reporting that really gets at stuff that for which people cannot put themselves forward, especially under the Obama administration, where you go to jail if you talk to reporters.
Well, and on that note, we're going to take a break. Rosemary Armeo is here, Mike Spain of the TU, and Alan Shartok, and we'd love to hear from you, unnamed or otherwise, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Back in a flash.
Support for WAMC comes from Amtrak, announcing the Amtrak Weekend Getaway Package for round-trip travel Thursday through Mondays between New York City and Montreal, now through April 24th, advance reservations required, Amtrak.com. NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses, NBTBank.com. And Susan O'Dale Taylor School, Troy, New York, preschool through sixth grade, educating children in the Capital Region since 1998, now offering school day tours on welcome days, nurturing minds, shaping the future, TaylorSchool.org.
The Roundtable on WAMC, 925 almost, and we're joined by Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain. I'm Ray Graff, in for Joe Donahue. You can join the conversation by emailing us at roundtable@wamc.org. All right, we've dispensed with the discussion for right now on Flight 370. And the other big news internationally, Russian troops mass at border with Ukraine. This is from the New York Times. With a referendum on secession looming in Crimea, Russia massed troops and armored vehicles in at least three regions along Ukraine's eastern border on Thursday, alarming the interim Ukraine government about a possible invasion and significantly escalating tensions in the crisis between the Kremlin and the West. Mike Spain, you go first.
I was impressed by what Angela Merkel, the chancellor of Germany, said. You know, basically that if Russia continues on this course, it will be not only a catastrophe for the Ukraine. She said that it would also be a threat to the European Union's relationship with Russia. And that's the real question. How much pressure can Europe and the United States really put on Russia, and will it matter to Putin, who's really out there building his little empire?
Does he care what, Alan, does Putin care, in fact, what the West thinks at this point?
And the answer is, we don't know. We know what we have on our hands. We have a KGB colonel from the old days. We have a guy who wants to make sure that the new Russia resembles the old Russia in terms of its power. We know that there's tremendous pressure being put on because of Crimea to get out. There is a lot of, if you stand off on the Crimean situation, you say, okay, they got a couple of things going for them, the Russians and the rest. So if this guy is the ultimate chess player that I think he is, he brings his troops out. He says, okay, let's see what you do with your knight now. I think that's what's going on. Put it better. I'm an unnamed source who hopes that that's what's going on.
I think he's a chess player with a sledgehammer myself, and I don't.
Well, it could be.
And Rosemary, you know quite a bit about this region.
I think yes, the U.S. and Europe could bring him to his knees, but that would require unity, which we have not seen in modern times.
This is economic unity. Yes,
they could shut down the banking and energy system on which Putin depends. They could do it. Will they do it?
And he knows that, right, Rosemary? He knows.
But it's a bluff.
You're right that he is the ultimate chess player, and he also knows that. How come we're not reading reports of U.S. troops being called up and getting ready? There's no indication that we're going in, despite Obama 2 days ago saying there'll be serious consequences. So Putin is reading that okay, it's not going to be military. The reaction to going into Crimea, which I think is a foregone conclusion, I think we're going to see that by the end of this week after the referendum, early next week. It is what happens then. You have to remember that Russia is completely open on its western border to Ukraine and to the other countries that are nervous right now, the Baltic states and Poland.
Yeah.
And they will stop at nothing to defend that border in the same way that we would not if we were under attack. If Mexico started to mass troops there, we would be doing the same. It's exactly the same. So, yes, he's a thug in the old world and all that, but this is basic national security we're talking about for Russia.
So you're defending his...
I'm not defending it. I'm telling you how strong his motive is.
And nothing has changed. I mean, this is what international relations has looked like. You know, the bully expecting that the other guys can't get it together, whether it's Chamberlain in England or... This is what it's always looked like. The year may be different.
Chamberlain in England or the United States in Cuba. We have Guantanamo there, the same way that they have their Navy base in Sevastopol. It's exactly the same, and we know that no one's going to stop us, and neither does Putin. So what does that mean? Have we taken over all of Cuba? No, we have not. Will he take over all of Ukraine?
We'll see. And you know what? Things are moving, and we will find out more, and as much as you may not want to hear this at home, we'll be talking about this on Monday as well, so mark that in your calendar. Hey, we're going to take a break here. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Mike Spain is here, Rosemary Armeo is here, and Alan Chartok. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We'll hear some news. We'll be back. Hey, it's the Roundtable. We have some nice, late 80s, early 90s sort of indie bumper music here today. We heard the Smiths earlier today. I don't know what that was. Was that also the Smiths? Yeah? It's 9:36. You are listening to the Roundtable, a music program with some chit-chat thrown in as well. Rosemary Armeo's here. Mike Spain of the TU. Alan Chartok is here. And Alan, we have an email or two, yes?
Yeah, we got a nice one from our old friend Robert in Castleton, who says, I've yet to hear from George W. Bush regarding the crisis in Ukraine. Bush saw Putin's soul. Remember that, guys?
Yeah.
Certainly he knows what Putin is going to do next.
Well,
it's sort of sardonic.
Yeah, a little snarky, sure.
Yeah.
We don't hear much from W. on anything. He's stayed out of the picture.
I think that was his view of what to do as an ex-president. And frankly, I think it was a classy move. I think that guys who are in the office, people who are in the office, understand what the pressures of the office are, and it may even transcend contemporary politics.
Well, it hasn't stopped Jimmy Carter.
In his mind.
Yeah, Jimmy Carter's sort of the model I like.
Okay,
yeah
I saw you kind of shake your head when Alan said it's a classy way to go. You don't agree, Rosemary?
I think that the...
No, you don't agree, no. Alan.
I do not agree, Alan. I do not agree. Imagine
each person,
that.
Yeah, sure. But each person has to find their own way. You know, I'm no big George W. Bush fan, as I think everybody knows. But I do
think you were, no.
But I do think this was the right approach for him. Clinton, of course, has spoken out quite frequently on different
things. Well, that's true.
And since he will be co-president soon, I think...
No,
he's going to stay up on the topic.
You know, okay.
That's not Ray, right.
One of my favorite Ray-isms was shared by my Aunt Ruth, who used to say, then you were in trouble.
He won't be co-president. Yeah. He'll just be hanging out, right?
He'll be making a lot of money, I can tell you that much.
Well, he already is. All right, let's move on. And once again... The email... Is there more email?
No. There'll be a lot more money to be made when you're the husband of the sitting president.
You may be onto something. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org if you want to weigh in. roundtable@wamc.org. We shift gears here. And a news piece yesterday in the New York Times. U.S. criticized for lack of action on mortgage fraud. 4 years after President Obama promised to crack down on mortgage fraud, his administration has quietly made the crime its lowest priority and has closed hundreds of cases after little or no investigation, the Justice Department's internal watchdog said on Thursday. The report by the department's inspector general undercuts the president's contentions that the government is holding people responsible for the collapse of the financial and housing markets. The administration has been criticized, in particular, for not pursuing large banks and their executives. Rosemary, you first.
Well, it's one more thing about which I'm disappointed with Mr. Obama's performance. This was a promise. He didn't keep it. There appears to have been some cover-up or lying about it from the Attorney General's office. And it's part of a pattern. We haven't looked at or gone after people who allowed us to torture, nor who sent the economic system crashing, and this is part of it. Fraud was perpetrated against many people in this country who were just trying to buy a house, and what we've heard about are people who didn't respect their own credit limits and tried to get a house when they shouldn't have.
Alan,
it's just unfair.
Alan, I suspect you may have a rebuttal.
No, not at all. But I do. I'm just thinking in the back of my head now. Who is the head of HUD? Well, a lot of this was going on. Mike, do you know who was the head of HUD then?
Oh, could it have been a previous New York State governor?
State governor. Well, to put it in perspective, and again, quoting from the New York Times. In cities across the country, mortgage fraud crimes have reached crisis proportions, Attorney General Eric Holder said at a mortgage fraud summit in Phoenix in 2010, quote, but we are fighting back.
Lie.
Is it a lie or is it just other things popped up?
Politically, I cannot understand why they wouldn't go after these people. There are so many people who... lives were destroyed by the mortgage crisis in 2008. And if there is...
Politically, there's so many people who caused all these problems who contribute to campaigns. If you're going to really go after mortgage fraud, you're talking about going after economic officials and bankers.
And you think that's why they're...
That's what I think.
And real estate people, you take a look at $33 million that our governor, Governor Cuomo, has in, not mine because I have DeBell Patrick.
Right.
But the $33 million, a lot of that came from real estate interests. I'll tell you right now, and I think Rosemary's right on the money. I think sorting that stuff out is very important.
But I mean,
isn't this the same reason we haven't gone after the Wall Street schemers who did this? We're talking about the big money bags of politics.
But don't we have to go back to Capitol Hill and say, look, the rules were put in place in Capitol Hill that allowed for maybe many people who should not have perhaps gotten mortgages to get them. I mean, you can't blame the realtors, can you?
I can blame the realtors and the bankers. I don't think the rules allowed for that. The rules eased up regulations that had kept people out of the market. It didn't say, okay, it's a free-for-all and you don't have to really have money to get a house. That was a result of loopholes and sale of financial, you know,
but isn't that bad legislating then if you leave a loophole that large?
No, it's bad enforcement. Well, and I also need to go back and And yes, I think I definitely do want to say it was a lie. In fact, I'm not saying it. It's the Attorney General's own internal review is saying
it. The Inspector General's report.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Okay.
It's hard to blame the realtors, though. I mean, they were really at the granular level. They were just following what everybody was taught back then, and that was invest big, take a big risk in a house, and it's going to be your future nest egg because the price will go up on the value.
Right.
Are we talking realtors, which I have to agree with you, or real estate developers, people who were in on this and cutting the deals? That's who
realtors
I mean.
Was mentioned, and I think that it was a little harsh on them.
Yeah, I cannot blame them.
Okay,
right.
Alan?
Well, I could blame anybody, and will,
and do actually.
But there is an interesting aspect to Republican Democratic politics here. The Democrats, when in office, always had a philosophy: let's get as many people into houses as we possibly can. That contributed. I'm sorry, because I tend to get closer to that model than others. That contributed to making mistakes, letting people into houses who had no business being there. Only, and I know how harsh that sounds, but because they couldn't pay for them, and then you take them away and break their hearts eventually. So you ask, what was HUD doing that time? During that time, what were they saying? You know, it's inconvenient to bring it up again, but you know, you got to take a look at it and its leadership.
That is not what we're talking about. We are talking about frauds where banks and real estate agencies, absolutely went out and enticed people to invest.
Yeah,
and
know
it
why,
surprised
you
them
know,
what happened. That's what we're talking about.
You know why, Rosemary? Because they could. Because everybody was so anxious to get everybody into a house. So there is complicity here. I know you like to fight. But
and
just
I like to
give
listen.
Up on this one.
All right, well, you know,
just give up on this one.
No, Alan, no.
All right, you two. If I have to stop this show, you know, according to the Inspector General's report, and again going back to this New York Times piece from yesterday, midday, the FBI received $196 million from the 2009 to 2011 fiscal years to investigate mortgage fraud. The report said, but the number of pending cases and agents investigating dropped in 2011.
Right.
Where's the money? Where'd it go?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Hearing nothing, we'll take a break. It's the Roundtable at WAMC. roundtable@WAMC.org is our email, and we'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Curran Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York. Legal and consulting services on regulatory issues for life insurance and annuity manufacturers and distributors. CurranCompliance.com. And New York Pain Management, offering pain management for chronic pain and spine care in a private office setting with Drs. Charles Gordon and Quentin Fung. Be set free. NYPainFree.com.
It's a roundtable at WAMC.org or just on your radio, the WAMC. It's 9:45. It's Friday. It's been a long week. Please bear with me. And thanks to Dave Hopper for some great bumper music today.
Hopper.
Rosemary Armeo's here. That's Alan Shartok and Mike Spain of the Times Union. Alan, we have some more email.
We do. From Kenner, who says, the Financial Times headline on Angela Merkel yesterday said she accused of Putin of following jungle law. Did not see any coverage of that phrase in American reporting. I believe her implication that Putin is lawless and not a civilized European is a significant departure from her usual caution.
What is jungle law?
You know, the survival of the fittest, I believe.
Okay.
You know, the tiger eats the monkey. And the report from an Obama aide said she put Putin in a different world should be interpreted in that light. Not that Putin is crazy, but that he's Asiatic, says Kenner. That's what Kenner said.
All right,
okay,
Kenner, thank you very much. Okay. I'm not sure.
Okay. And then we heard from Jenna, who said, why wouldn't Bill Clinton be the first man? Right. Well, that's right. The first man.
Of course.
He already is.
Getting $1.5 million for getting $1.5 million for a speech or whatever he's going to be getting.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Claire says the realtors used to qualify people for mortgages and did not put people into houses they could not afford. The banks took qualifying away from the realtors.
My point.
Allowed the people to get over their heads. Claire from Fly Creek. Fly Creek, right. And let's see. And
you're slurring your words, Alan.
and then this one I don't understand at all. Perhaps
okay.
You do.
All right.
It comes from Sam, who says, the phonetic pronunciation would be Werther. It is the German word from a literary word by Goethe. We are pronounced like viz. Riz are silent at the end of the word in the context. Does anybody know what that's about?
No. Is that spam? Is that one of those, you know, you can last longer kind
no,
of things?
No, it's too... well, it could be.
Okay.
It could
you
be,
know.
Or it could have been an underwriting announcement.
Yeah, maybe we should just move on and we'll sort that out
okay, got it.
In the future.
Got it.
All right, it's the
okay,
roundtable now that we've sorted that out. And Mike, in your lovely paper, The Times Union, some interesting ones today. A headline... Region surprise selection raises questions and process about process. That's from Rick Carlin. What do you have on that?
Yeah, this is a thoughtful news analysis, actually, from Rick Carlin, our reporter at the state capitol. He watches what goes on in the areas of education, among other things. And, you know, this week, the legislature, the joint legislature, fulfilled their requirement to select members for the New York State Board of Regents. Ordinarily,
it's the only time they sit together for any purpose.
Yes, that's right. It's a joint session where they do this. But ordinarily, the Republicans in the state Senate were outnumbered by the Democrats who control the Assembly, so they never would show up. This week, they showed up, so it was somewhat historic. And in the process, to sort of, as Rick points out, you know, it looked like somebody had to pay a price for the controversy over the implementation of the Common Core curriculum and all the related testing and the evaluations of teachers. So one regent who was up for one of the three regents who was up for re-election, you know, had to be the sacrificial lamb, I guess, and backed out. That was a regent from the Albany area, Mr. Jackson, James Jackson.
And that was the night before the session.
Right. He backed out, and then they
walked the plank.
Right. I think he found that there wasn't support. His base of support was lost. And that
he
is
was
a
told to walk the plank.
Right. He was told to walk
the plank. You may be right.
And he and in his place, the session elected Josephine Victoria Finn, a town justice from Sullivar County. She's a lawyer and an activist, and she also runs a very interesting online weight loss business where you can pay up to $3,600 a year.
You're getting this, Alan?
Uh-oh, I got it. Did you guys have a picture of her in the paper?
Yes, we did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyways.
See, I know what you're up to because she happens to be a little bit overweight and running a weight loss clinic. So you put her into the paper because you couldn't say that there was an interesting thing there.
All right. It's roundtable at WAMC.org,
by the way. That's what newspapers do, you know.
Well, what the point of Rick's analysis today is that it went just exactly the way that Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver wanted it to go. He has enormous control and power over his Democrats in the Assembly, and they do what he says. And in spite of some suggestions recently that his power was weakened by the, you know, the Lopez scandal, et cetera, he is still firmly in control, and that was demonstrated this week.
All right, another one in the Times.
And you know why that is? That's because of the iron law of oligarchy. You all know about that, right? Iron law of oligarchy states that when you have a group of people in a room, one guy gets to be in charge. That's the oligarch. Right. And in this case, it's Shelley Silver.
This one is from the TU. State stalls Albany bid. On her 72nd day in office, Albany Mayor Kathy Sheehan experienced a rite of passage for any mayor of the capital city, hearing the state say no, or at least not now. Mike?
Yeah, Jordan Carlio Evangelist, who covered Jerry Jennings for a decade and now is over at the state capitol, has some great insight in this story, and that is that every year Jennings would go over to the capitol and try to lobby on behalf of the city asking for something called a pilot, and that is a payment in lieu of taxes. It's to get additional money from the state to cover the services the city provides to the state workers, for example, at the state Harriman office campus, and for fire protection and police protection, et cetera. And every year it kind of stays the way it is.
Yeah.
Well, this year, the new mayor, Kathy Sheehan, has done a couple of things to help remedy the $16 million annual budget deficit that the city is facing by asking for the state's restructuring board to help it identify ways to make the city's operations run better. And she can apply for grant money through that. And she's already done that, which I think was a smart thing to do. And now she is getting local lawmakers, members of the assembly representing the Albany area, business leaders together to ask the state to up the pilot payment because of new construction at the state office campus and the Harriman office campus, where they're going to build a giant lab to house the various Wadsworth laboratories, for example. And this, a state official has basically said, no, you've applied for this other help under the restructuring, so we can't do anything about adding to the pilot.
But there's a sneaking suspicion. First of all, Jerry Jennings, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm really not all that familiar with it, but didn't Jerry Jennings leave Kathy Sheehan, the new mayor, with quite a little debt?
Oh, yes. And it was a debt that was rolling over, and it continued to roll over. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And number two, is there the sneaking suspicion on anybody's part that Jerry Jennings was a little bit closer, sort of in terms of Weltanschauung worldview, to this governor than Kathy Sheehan, the progressive, is?
Well, he was an ally, an early supporter of Andrew Cuomo, and I think they had a relationship, but it didn't translate into big
money.
Pilot payments.
Didn't get money either.
Not all the time.
No.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
I think it was rather cavalierly
handled.
I mean, we just talked about the speaker.
Yeah.
The governor just said no. It was like a slap on the wrist. And she's actually done a really good job trying to round up the big institutions in the city to have them, as they say, voluntarily give money in lieu of taxes.
Right.
And she's got, 65% of her city is not taxable, which is that's
huge.
It is.
The mayor in Washington has this problem.
And part of this was that, part of this event yesterday where she, which happened coincidentally with the announcement from the budget division people that, oh, I'm sorry, you're not going to get a pilot at this point or a pilot increase.
Did they say I'm sorry? I don't think
They didn't say I'm sorry. They just
they said no.
Good point, Rosemary.
Excellent point, and that is true. Some representatives from the community led by Jim Barber, who's the head of Albany Medical Center, is trying to enlist local nonprofits that are in the city, a lot of institutions like Albany Med and probably St. Peter's and various groups, to step up colleges, for example, to step up and give the city some money in lieu of the services they get. And that's a good thing, too. But it's not the kind of money the city needs to close its budget gap.
That's Mike Spain of the Times Union. Rosemary Armeo is here. Alan Chartok. And Mike, the story of the day from the Times Union. And we have about 3 or 4 minutes left here. Schenectady kindergartner spends day at wrong school. What?
Well, the Schenectady City School District's getting a little heat today. What happened was a couple of days ago, a kindergartner was waiting for the bus. The bus came up, and the mom was with the kindergartner, and the child got on the bus. Unfortunately, it was the wrong bus. There was a new bus driver or a substitute bus driver that day, so it wasn't readily clear to the bus driver that the child wasn't supposed to be there. And, school buses look alike. The child was, instead of being brought to the Howe Elementary School over on Baker Avenue, it was brought to another elementary school, and the Yates School. And they were expecting a new student that day for first grade, and somebody saw this young kid come in and said, "Are you so-and-so?" And according to the school district, the child said, "Yes, I am," and even filled out forms with that name that they supplied for her.
Which is
crazy.
A kindergartner doesn't know how to do her own name.
Now, the school district statement used the words, "While the student did impersonate another student," they acknowledged that
cover
other
up.
Red flags should have been raised and that they should have discovered this, and the mother didn't know anything about it till she went to pick the child up at the bus stop, and get off right. And they quickly.
But let me put it this way: it's a lot better, guys, than being left in a school bus all day long.
Which is,
I think it's a fairly honest mistake.
I don't think we have the whole story. I don't know how a kindergartner could write her own name, much less someone else's. She impersonated another student, like she had a
that's
motive.
That's a pretty strong verb.
It's nuts. It's crazy.
Now, the police, we can make light of it, and there are some hilarious aspects of this, but the police are launching an investigation. The mother was worried all day, so there are very serious aspects to this story. However, how on earth does a 5-year-old do that? Yeah. Or why?
Okay, here's another.
I bet this kid is a clever kid.
Yeah,
one more aspect of this story. The mother doesn't get her kid back off the bus. So she calls the school district and goes, my kid is in there. They say to her, call the cops. Yeah. What?
They should have immediately called the police. So I think there are some and it's common, not universal, but it's common that school systems, when they take attendance and they don't have an excuse, the kids' parents don't call in and say, you know, Johnny is going to be out today and he's got the flu or something.
No.
They should call the home to verify that the kid was truly absent and what the story is. But they didn't do it here, and that might have fix this a lot sooner than later in the afternoon.
I was happy to hear the district said that they might have to make some changes in procedures, like how to welcome in new students and to make sure buses don't line up, in one bus stop so children can get on the wrong one more easily. And
Well, it's a fascinating story, and you can of course find out more at the website. It's timesunion.com, right, Mike?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And Rosemary, you're leaving us for a few days. You will not be here early in the week.
I'm not going to be there the entire week. I'm going to see my granddaughter.
Where are you going?
My granddaughter in Virginia Beach.
That's okay, right, Alan?
I like her better than you guys. I'm
no.
sorry.
Oh, hey,
sorry.
We have one more email, Alan. You have about 30 seconds, if you don't mind, sir.
Okay, here from Claire. The realtors used to qualify people for mortgages and did not put people into houses they could not afford. The bank took qualifying away from the realtors and allowed the people to get in over their heads. From Claire from Flycake Creek.
Okay, that's it. And we are done. So if you want to weigh in, we'd love to hear from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can find out more about this program. Here are some segments, including this sterling hour of chat, right at our website, WAMC.org/roundtable. And you can play back the panel, gather your children around, and or not.
It could be a crime in some states.
Thanks to Rosemary Armeo and Mike Spain and to Alan Shartok. And thanks to you for being with us. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Hour two, part deux, is on the way.